Always good to see you. Thanks, sir. Hi, Mr. Attorney General.
So I just had a couple more questions.
Oh, of course, I'm happy to. Yeah, I'm happy to. Let me scooch out of the way of these guys.
And you answered that
the agency makes the decision as to whether there are what are called credible allegations of fraud. That's the terminology that everybody uses. And the agency made that determination. So I think that they probably had some flexibility in their decision as to when they reached that level of credible allegations of fraud. But I think once they made that determination and gave the files to our office, then we feel like we have an obligation to investigate because, you know, once the agency finds out. So one of the ways that the check holds can be taken off is when we complete our investigation, if we find that there's no fraud, then obviously the check hold gets taken off. But we talked about that. The timing on that is very difficult because it takes quite a while to do a complete criminal investigation.
Let me ask you that,
sure.
about that came up when you said that.
Yes.
There are 150 random files.
Right, they did a sampling. They did
a sampling. So are you going beyond that sampling? Or are you focused on those 150 that the PCG
found? Oh, no, absolutely. We have to go much beyond the sampling. I mean, once it's turned over to us for investigation, we have to determine whether it's fraud or not. Not whether it's just an allegation or a credible allegation or whatever. And so we have the kinds of investigators who can look at the billings, who can look at the medical records and determine whether the billing was actually done correctly. And then, frankly, even once we find out that it's not correct, then you have to find whether there's criminal intent or not, for the criminal part. And there are other options. I mean, we can bring criminal action. We could bring a civil action if we think that there's civil fraud. If we find that there's misbilling, but that it doesn't reach the level of fraud, then we would turn it back to the agency, and then they would deal with getting paid back for mistakes, basically, and those kinds of things. So,
are you finding that trend at all in your work so far?
You know, I don't go down into the depths of the agency every day to see what they're doing, and so when the investigation's done, they'll give me a brief.
I
do get briefings on a fairly regular basis, some of which I can't really discuss yet. But I think that it's clear, and this was clear in some legislative hearings that we had, that there are a variety of allegations there. I mean, I think that there are 15 different agencies. We have concerns that they've been painted with a broad brush, but that I think that the allegations are different for each agency, and so we're cognizant of that, and we're looking at that, and so we believe strongly that everybody's entitled to the presumption of innocence, and so we don't assume that anybody actually has committed fraud unless we uncover it in what we're doing. There is in this law that is very draconian that says you have to do the check holds. There is something that says that there are good cause exceptions that can be brought into play by the agency, in this case our Human Services Department, where they can look and see if there are good cause exceptions, one of which is that the putting the check holds on causes significant damage to the Medicaid system. And so I think one of the things that we're all looking at is whether or not there are instances where there's damage being done to the system, and of course the secretary has assured everyone that they're taking over the clients in good stead, and that all of that's being done to the point that there's no damage being done to the beneficiaries of the program, and that I think we're watching. I think a lot of people watching the legislature is overseeing, but that's where the discretion of the agency comes back into play, I believe, is for them looking to see what's happening to the program, because if they know that people are not getting services, then I think that they are required under the system to do something.
Has your office heard that kind of... I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just talked to a young man who I had interviewed previously who was a patient here with El Corazon, who said, I'm not going anymore.
Yes.
I just don't know who's there. I don't want out-of-state people to have access to my file, my life. He's genuinely concerned, and we're hearing that.
We're hearing that, too, and I think with regard to behavioral health services, that trust in your provider is a really important thing. And so, once again, it's our role in the AG's office is just to investigate the fraud, and so it's very difficult for us to do anything other than to pass those concerns along to the secretary when we see those as well. And I think that Congressman Lujan said today that they're contacting the federal secretary, Secretary Sebelius, to have them look into those issues. And so I hope that at the federal level they'll be able to look and see what's going on. And I would assume that Secretary Sebelius would have enough authority to maybe to lift the check holds or to do something like that. In terms of the law, whenever you give some discretion to an agency and you say that you have to find good cause, it's difficult to challenge that. If they say, well, no, we think everything is going fine and we're doing this, it's hard to go to court and challenge that because the way most systems work is that there is indeed some discretion in the agency that provides the program to do that. But I think our congressional delegation is raising that to Secretary Sebelius. You know, notwithstanding what we all think about how this should have been done or what should have been done, and I said this earlier today, I think it's incumbent on all of us to work together to try and make sure that the beneficiaries of the program are not being harmed in all of this.
As the Attorney General who oversees the Consumer Protection Division, mm-hmm. Do you feel, I mean, that the reputations of these nonprofits are forever tainted, that they cannot recover even though you find that they did nothing significantly wrong, any of them?
I have heard from the nonprofits, many of whom I know and who I think have been providing services for a long time in New Mexico and doing a good job of it, that that the allegations are serious enough that it's bound to be harmful to their reputations. And I think that it's hard to undo that. I mean, if we find that there is no fraud, we'll certainly publicize that and make it clear that we found that there was no fraud. If we find that there is fraud, we'll go to grand juries and we'll get indictments and people will know what the fraud was. And so that system will become very public. We certainly have had other cases like these. This is the first time that we've had 15 all at once. But there have been a few other cases that have been brought to us, you know, earlier under the Affordable Care Act that are similar systems. And I think that the impact on the nonprofits, because none of these are organizations that were making big profits or able to bank a lot of money or whatever. And so I'm actually cognizant of the fact that when it takes us 3 or 4 months to do an investigation, that it puts maybe a fatal financial strain on the organization. We're constrained to do what our job is to do, which is to do the investigation. And I want to make sure that if we tell people that there either is or isn't fraud, that they can be assured that we've done a complete investigation. And so,
how many people do you have working on it? And again, the timeline.
We actually have had, as a historical matter, about 17 people in my Medicaid fraud unit. So all of those people are working on this to some extent. And then I've moved 4 investigators from other parts of the agency to try and boost that. And we have asked other outside agencies that have investigators that can loan us some to help do that. So we've doubled the number of investigators that we have working on these cases now. I think that they're probably 10 investigators or 12 investigators that are working on the cases now. So we really have thrown a lot of additional resources into it, but partly because of the tight budgets that all governments have had over the last few years, it is difficult to bring to bear, you know, the amount of resources that it would take to do all of these really quickly, especially for white collar and financial crimes where there are lots and lots of documents. I mean, we have thousands of pages of documents. It actually does take quite a long time to thoroughly investigate the documents. And so it's certainly a criminal investigation. I mean, the allegations are for fraud and we investigate them looking for criminal fraud. Although, as I've said, there might be civil levels of fraud. There might be misbillings. There might be a lot of other things there. And what's happened is that the Human Services Department has turned over, you know, their thoughts and their allegations, but it's up to us to sort it all out. And that is a much bigger job than just doing a sampling and saying, well, we think that there are problems here with the billings. I mean, it's one of my prosecutors says that a box of paper is not a box of evidence. I mean, we have to turn all of these documents into potential evidence in a criminal trial. And if there are allegations of fraud that prove to be true, then it's going to be very important that we're able to document how we came about our discovery of those documents and present them in court. So, because we do think that the taxpayers have an interest in all of this too. We want to make sure that the money that's being spent on medical care is being spent wisely. And now that we're expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, I think that's why Congress put these very draconian anti-fraud provisions into the law. But it's now up to us and Medicaid fraud groups across the country in all states are struggling with this problem.